The music business was mean. Mean like Mel B was to Mel C. The road to fame was littered with broken dreams, broken hearts, and actual litter. And the air was thick with unanswered questions. In a grimy office above the noise and filth, two men worked tirelessly to solve these mysteries. Their names? Tony Blackburn and his young apprentice, Ricky Wilson. The sign on the frosted glass door? Ricky and Tony. Pop detectives.
It feels good to be back at work, doesn't it, Tony?
Oh, it does, Ricky. I've just done nothing. For 4 weeks, mind you. That's been my career for 55 years, to be honest with you. But it's,
you've been in training for a very long time.
For a very long time. Well, Ricky, we had to get out of the office rather quickly, didn't we, with the lockdown?
Yeah, I can remember that.
I bought a few things back from the office.
I bought the rubber stamp. I left one with you as well.
Excellent.
Look, I ordered one on Amazon. Did it arrive?
It did. Yes,
but also, before I left, as you can hear in the background, I recorded some of the sounds of the office so we can really concentrate and not be distracted by the things that are happening at home. Because, you know, some of the sounds at home, like the washing machine going around and... You know, I think she's upstairs right now watching Joe Wicks dancing around in his underpants. Yep. And I don't want that noise when we're doing this. And the sounds of the office really help me. So that's why there's a recording on in the background.
Now, don't take this the wrong way, Ricky, but, you know, I'm not coming on to you, but I do miss being
closer. Oh, I do too.
This distancing, I would rather be closer to you, as close as possible, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, sometimes it's picking up on the tiny micro expressions that you give that really help me crack the case.
Yes, exactly. Are you finding it interesting being isolated?
I didn't want to say this, but I like it a lot. And I know there's some terrible things going on in the world, and, you know, it's quite depressing.
Yeah.
But I'm finding it. I think my days are going quicker than they used to. Because I've been watching you on the internet playing your songs that you've been writing.
Well, it was all started by you, remember?
I do, but you took
you
that.
Dreamt that I was I'd done a song.
But you, I know, and it was so...
You were dreaming about me.
I was dreaming about you playing me a song, and I think that you're being kept down by, in inverted commas, the man with your music, because it's not reaching as many people as it should be, and I'm a bit worried that you're being suppressed by the music
by
moguls.
By the A&R people.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking for... But, you know, there is room for a more mature man in tights, and I think there is a market out there for people over the age of 50 or 55 or so who would like my sort of music. I mean, I'm preparing this album at the moment, as you've seen, and it's going pretty well with the piano and the guitar, of course. A lot of people have said that my instruments are slightly out of tune.
Well, who are they to say?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's modern.
Well, that's what I thought. With that sort in mind, I've got perfect tone myself.
You are perfect. That's a great stage name.
It is, isn't it? Perfect tone, yeah. Mm. So as I've got that, I can afford to have my instrument slightly out of tune.
Exactly.
It's a new form of music.
The ceiling fan whirled around as slowly as a sun-stroked fly. Ricky and Tony, pop detectives.
Oh, let's hear the voicemail that was left about our new case, our first lockdown case, Tony.
Oh, lovely. This is exciting.
Ricky, Tony, this isn't my real voice because I need you to look into a case that's way above my station. It's got all the hallmarks of a political scandal. Rumor has it that Miley Cyrus was employed by Obama to distract the public from what he was really getting up to. Smoke and mirrors, you might say. Anyway, I'm not sure I'm buying it, but you're the guy to set the record straight. Good luck.
Okay, so, Miley Cyrus. She was employed as an elaborate ruse by the then-president, Barack Obama, to distract the US from important issues. What do you think about that, Tony?
Well, I think that's very controversial, but I have heard that theory, you know, that if the government wants to give us some bad news, they tend to put it out at Christmas or New Year when we're all busy doing other things. So I can understand that, and it's an interesting case, this one.
Hiding bad news in bigger news. Well, I mean, at the moment, you turn on the news... And, you know, we're used to bad news, but this seems the only news at the moment, I hate to talk about it because I want to get away from it, is the virus. And even the light-hearted stories at the end of the news are still virus-related, so it's hard to get away from. So if you were some sort of rotter, you could be getting away with anything right now in the public eye.
Well, you could.
And I would like a TV show at the moment, once a week even, that was half an hour, that didn't mention anything to do with the virus.
Well, I've been watching. I can put you in the right direction.
Okay.
I've been watching The Gold Channel and Heidi High.
Oh, and, what a show.
They have not so far. I've seen four episodes, and they haven't mentioned the virus yet.
Oh, that,
so I think, you know, try it, Ricky.
I will try it.
Should we do the Heidi High?
Hoody ho.
Yeah, it's lovely. Nice. I did a pantomime with Sue Pollard once when she was just about to get that part as well. She's absolutely mad.
Oh, yeah, bonkers.
Nuts.
I've met her a couple
absolutely
of times.
Absolutely bonkers.
She, yep. Sometimes if you want to confuse a waiter in a restaurant when you're allowed to go to them, order the soup pollard.
What is in that?
Oh, it's mad. Bonkers. a pair of jazzy spectacles. Peggy?
Peggy, that's yeah, right. Yeah, Peggy. Always wanted to be a yellow coat.
Yeah. Did you ever see the last episode?
Remind me what that was.
Well, I don't want a spoiler alert for people that are going through it on Gold. But
it'd be all right.
She got a yellow coat. Yeah, they closed it down, and she. But on the day it closed, she became a yellow coat. Yeah.
Oh, that's. I haven't seen that episode.
Oh, it's
Felix Burness, the guy who does the horses. He used to be the warm up man at Noel's house party, and once again, a lovely guy, sadly no longer with us.
Yeah, and Noel's house party was pioneering as television, actually from someone's house. And now all TV seems to be from, even Ant and Dec's Saturday Night Takeaways from their house.
Yeah, it was ahead of its time.
Hey, back to Miley Cyrus. So it was in 2014, a rock performer from a band called Korn with a K.
That's an interesting one.
It is. They're quite heavy.
Being a vegetarian, I eat a lot of corn.
Right.
But it's not quite the same thing.
They're the covers band for Korn.
Korn. Oh, I see, yeah.
Jonathan Davis, he's in that band. That's not a very rock star name, is it? It's more of a politician.
No,
name. Anyway, he went on a talk show with someone called Alex Jones, the Alex Jones Show. Not obviously Alex Jones, the one show, Tony.
She's very nice.
And she's, as you know, one of our undercover operatives. She feeds us information about the pop stars that appear on the one show. And that's how we get a lot of our cases, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I love the Welsh accent as well, don't you?
Oh, it's so musical.
Poetic. It is very poetic, yeah. Do you love whales? I love whales. I mean, no, I'm not talking about whales that swim around in the sea. I like them as well. But I like whales, particularly North Wales, actually.
Well, you know, they've got a nice, softer accent up there, and then it goes more guttural at the bottom, which is...
Snowdonia's lovely. And so many people struggle up that mountain. Don't they realise there's a railway that goes up there? I don't understand.
Yeah, it. I know. I struggle up to Leeds, and there's a railway, apparently.
I've seen so many people struggling up that mountain, I just sit there by the window and give them the finger and think, you know, for goodness sake.
So, but back to Alex Jones. He's an interviewer, anyway. In this, Jonathan Davis, the singer of Korn, accused the media and Barack Obama of using celebrities, specifically Miley Cyrus, to distract people while he passed controversial legislation. Now, that's the crux of it. Were these pop stars, especially Miley Cyrus, used? Were they paid off? I'm unsure about this. Seems too much of an uncontrollable element to put into your politics to add in there a scantily clad female pop star.
Yeah, I think you put that very well, actually.
Well, we need to talk to someone who, in the know of the way politicians use these kind of pop stars. So a spin doctor who was there during Tony Blair's reign, and that is a guy called Lance Price. And I'm gonna get him on a conference call right now. So hang on, let me type away.
Excellent. That's what I love about working with you, Ricky. You come up with the best people to talk about the thing that we're trying to solve.
Well, I've got a lot of time on my hands.
Caller joining. Caller joining.
Hi, Tony. I'm Lance. I used to work in political communications in that. Den of Iniquity, 10 Downing Street. So I know a little bit about how politicians use pop stars if they get the chance.
So you've heard of this before, pop stars being pushed to the forefront in order to hide things going on by politicians in behind closed doors. Is that
true? I mean, there's a name for it. It's called dead catting. And the idea is that you throw a dead cat on the table when you don't want people around the table to be talking about what they are talking about, and they all suddenly sit up and look at it and say, there's a dead cat on the table. And so it's a way of deflecting attention from something that you don't want people talking about to something else. It doesn't matter what that something else is, but actually pop stars, people in the pop business, are very good at playing that role. And of course, as you say, back in the day, when I worked at Number 10, when Tony Blair was Prime Minister, We had you all in. We had the Gallaghers in and all the rest of it, and it sprinkled a little bit of stardust on Tony Blair in the early years of his prime ministership, perhaps.
Can I ask you a question about Tony Blair? Would you agree with me that he was the best Conservative Labour Party prime minister they ever had?
I think he was a very good prime minister, but I would say that because he was my boss and I worked for him. But I still think it. He made a lot of mistakes, and there are things that people won't forgive him for, and that's fine. But you're right, he did reach out to people who would consider themselves conservatives. But that's how you win elections. You get the guys and the women who voted for the other side to vote for you.
And how do you become a spin doctor?
Well, it helps if you know a little bit about the media. So, like you, although not for quite so many years, I had a long career at the BBC doing politics, covering politics, and I was a political correspondent. I was one of those hapless people who stands outside the House of Commons on the 10 o'clock news and tries to explain what was going on. And so politicians, prime ministers especially, like to have people around them who kind of understand the media because they don't really understand it. They don't really understand show business either. In fact, somebody said that politics was show business for ugly people. And so they need, those ugly people, they need others to explain to them how journalism works, which was my job, or maybe how showbiz works.
Right. Well, there's one case in particular we're trying to dismiss as true or false. It's that Miley Cyrus was used to as smoke and mirrors to hide an Obama controversial legislation that the US military was going to detain individuals indefinitely without a trial by having her perform lewd acts at an award ceremony. Now, the idea that they would actually contact someone and get them to do something rather than just kind of like shine a light on something, is that possible, do you think?
If this case ever came to court, I would have to be a witness for the defence, I'm afraid. I mean, if politics is show business for ugly people, Barack Obama wasn't one of the ugly people. He was actually quite hot for a politician. So there's two reasons why I don't think it's true. One is the people who would pay any attention at all to Taylor Swift probably weren't paying any attention whatsoever to the other story, and therefore it wouldn't work as a strategy, as a political strategy. And the other reason is that actually politicians like you to think that they're pretty smart and they can organise all kinds of conspiracy, but they wouldn't have the wit and the wherewithal to get something together of the kind that you're describing. So I'm pretty certain that simply because two things happen at more or less the same time, it doesn't mean that there's a conspiracy that links the two.
Do you think some of the politicians are a bit thick?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, there are some politicians who couldn't get a job in any other business if they hadn't come up either through a trade union or maybe through the Conservative Party. I mean, all the parties are the same. I'm not making a party political point at all. But there has in the past, it's getting a little bit better now, to be honest, but there have been some remarkably stupid people on the back benches in the House of Commons, and some of them even make it to the cabinet.
I think more and more, and this is a sweeping statement, that politicians seem to me more and more like the people you didn't like at school, and they're just getting revenge.
Yeah, exactly. And they know that you didn't like them at school, and they're getting their own back, and they're saying, look at me, I can actually make it in life because I can find enough mugs to vote for me and put me into the House of Commons.
Because at one time, Lance, you were deputy to Alistair Campbell, that's right, isn't it?
I was, indeed, yeah.
He was a spin doctor. Did he ever get fed up with people saying, "Are you in the soup?"
And are you in the thick of it? I mean, we get asked all the time whether the thick of it, that great TV program, is like real life. I mean, it's like real life once a month or so, and then there's lots of boredom in between. But I mean, it can get pretty crazy in there, and we had some pretty wild times.
But Tony Blair did quite a good job of integrating pop and politics. But more and more I see it happen, and it comes across quite cringy sometimes, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of got away with it with the Britpop era, and because he was projecting something about the country. He was saying something about the country. Here's this young country, and Britpop was, you know, huge around the world at the time, so it kind of worked. And if you go even further back, Harold Wilson, Tony will remember Harold Wilson. Harold Wilson did it with the Beatles. He had the Beatles in when he was Prime Minister in the 1960s, and it sprinkled a little bit of stardust over that Labour government way back then. But the trouble is, it tends to come back to bite you. It kind of works at the time, and you might get a few good headlines out of it. But, you know, the Gallagher brothers were pretty hard on Tony Blair eventually, and the Beatles returned their OBEs that had been given to them by Harold Wilson. So if you are going to mix with these people, you have to bear in mind that, you know, it can feel good for a while, but actually there's often a sting in the tail afterwards.
I always find it awkward when you see a politician trying to make out that he loves pop music or something like that. And out of the two, you probably, Theresa May, is she a better dancer than Tony Blair?
Actually, Tony Blair is quite a cool dancer. I don't think he's ever done it. He must have done it on camera, but I can't remember when.
That must be the first rule you say as a spin doctor.
Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, Tony Blair was in a rock band. He was in a band called Ugly Rumours. Talking about politics being showbiz for ugly people, he was in a band called Ugly Rumours. And it could have gone either way, you know. He could have ended up on stage. He could have been the David Bowie of our times. But he had a real thing for pop stars. I mean, I remember him being so excited when Mick Jagger, and I think Bowie as well, went to Checkers to see him. I mean, he really did have stars in his eyes.
That's amazing.
That's the thing, though, isn't it? If you're the Prime Minister and you invite somebody to Checkers, you're not going to have that invitation turned down, are you?
No, exactly. They're going to come, and he milked it for all it was worth.
That's great. You know the particular Glastonbury where Corbyn got up to speak? Everyone was very excited and cheering for him. And then he went on for a little bit too long with his speech. Mm. He lost people's attention very quickly. And ironically, we were waiting to go on stage on the other stage. So we were standing there going, he's really going on, isn't he? We're going to have to cut two songs. I think people just wanted to see him get up and wave.
Yeah, politicians always do that. You know. They always go on for too long. And it was always my advice to them to keep it short, you know, work out two or three things you want to say them well, and then get off. And people will remember you for that. But of course, they're doing it for the cameras. They're not doing it for the people in the crowd, really.
I find it very, very difficult to hold an audience attention as soon as I get on stage, to be honest with you.
That's why you wear the spangly jackets.
That's what those black round plastic things were for, so that you could fill in the gaps when you had nothing left to say.
Right. Well, I was a sort of a spin, well, not
spin
doctor,
jockey.
Yeah. Spin jockey. Yeah.
Still are.
Well, that's a great term you come up. That's why you're a spin doctor. You came up with that straight away. Fantastic, Lance. Spin jockey. I'm going to use that from now on.
I mean, I went down the career path that I did, but I quite like the idea of being a spin doctor. It must have incredible highs when you get it right.
It's incredibly exciting, actually, it is. And especially if you're at the kind of level that I had the really good fortune to be, where you're really at the heart of power. And I was there during Tony Blair's first term when things were going pretty well. You know, we had a massive majority. Everyone seemed to love him. And you can swagger about the place thinking you're the bee's knees, but actually, of course, you're not. It's just your job to get other people's message across. It's not about you.
But did you ever take huge gambles with that? Because that's what I think would be exciting, going, this could be the best thing, or it could backfire.
Yeah, one of the worst gambles we made, we put... people were complaining about Blair being a bit... he liked the high life a bit much, and he liked his fancy holidays, and he was always jetting off to Cliff Richard's place in Jamaica or wherever it is.
Which is now for sale.
Apparently so.
Barbados, isn't it?
So we did two things. One, we put him on EasyJet, and another, we put him on the tube. So there was a picture of him coming off EasyJet looking as if he'd had the worst possible time in his life. And then we put him on the tube to go to the Millennium Dome, which we were also trying to sell as the greatest thing since sliced bread, when everyone knew that it wasn't. And he was standing there sort of, you know, hanging on to the strap. And no one would talk to him. Everyone looked the other way, like they do on the tube in London. You know, no one will make eye contact. So again, the pictures look absolutely ghastly, but it sounded like a good idea when we were planning it.
And still keep in touch with Tony?
I see him occasionally, bump into him. He's not the kind of guy who sort of picks up the phone every day. So I'm sure he owes me a call. But once in a while, we'll still say hello.
You had a bit of a fallout with Boris, didn't you, when he was mayor as well? He wasn't very complimentary to what you
did. You've been doing your research. You've been doing your research, Tony. Well, I wrote a book about being in Number 10, and it was the first diary that came out. They actually had quite good reviews, but Boris, who was then a journalist, he was a much better journalist. Well, let's not go into that. But Boris, when he was a journalist, wrote a review of it in The Spectator, and he said, Lance Price is a turd, because he just thought it was the wrong thing to do for people who had a sort of up-close and personal view of politics then to come out and talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not been polite about many people. He called me an epic softie. But they do come back and bite you when you do get into power. because, you know, there's people like you in the sidelines going, I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with you.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, how many things has Boris Johnson said, and Lance Price is a turd is the least of them when he was a journalist, that, you know, would have caused enormous embarrassment to most politicians and certainly to most prime ministers. But because he's got this fantastic way of shrugging it all off and making a joke of it, he gets away with it.
Yeah. I'm gathering from everything you're saying that the input of a politician putting an uncontrollable element into their career, such as a pop star, to try and make something happen would be a bad idea, because it's something that they can't
control. They can't control. You know, and to their credit, people in show business don't like being used in politics. Now, some of them, there's a few, obviously, who are very, very deeply committed to one party or another. And you mentioned Springsteen in the States, who's a totally committed a Democrat and would do anything for any Democrat politician. And there's a few people, Paul Weller and others in Britain, who I suppose are equally committed. And you know, politics is almost as important to them as music is. But that's not true of, rightly so, and thank goodness, of most pop stars. You just have to be very, very wary. But if you want to draw attention to a really important issue, it can work. Now, the last Tory government under David Cameron, William Hague was the Foreign Secretary, and he was very keen to do a campaign about violence against women in the Third World, which is not the kind of issue that really most people, it's very, very important, but it's not the kind of issue that most people would kind of pay much attention to. But he got Angelina Jolie in on the case and got worldwide publicity for it. So it can be valuable.
How do you bring that about? Do you is it your job to find a pop star or an actor or somebody like that in show business to support the party? And do you actually think it's a good thing? Because I've always thought you alienate half your audience.
Yeah, no,
you?
I think that's true. I mean, we always used to employ people who had worked in showbiz to do it. So we had Alvin Stardust's former manager, who was a good mate of Tony Blair's, and he used to go through his contacts list and find people for us. From the pop star's point of view, yeah, you're right.
Oh,
I mean, it is. You do take a bit of a risk, and most of them are quite reluctant to do it, actually.
So the general rule would be that if you were going to get a pop star or an actor or someone from show business involved, the reason to get involved usually has to transcend party politics and be something that is a universal importance or interest.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely right, because I don't think the public aren't stupid. Voters aren't stupid, and they're not going to vote one way or the other just because a pop star that they like has said that that's how they're going to vote. So I don't think that pop stars bring votes along with them, but they can bring passion along with them. And to be any good at their job, you know, they're great performers and they're good at going out there and articulating something. So if you've got a cause or an issue that you want to promote, then that's when they really come into their own.
Am I right in thinking, I don't like to push myself here too much, Lance, but if you were in the middle of a campaign, and I don't sort of say if I'm Conservative, Labour or what, but would probably be the sort of person that you'd be after.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think any political party would be delighted to have, you know, Tony Blackburn says vote blah.
So why has nobody asked me yet?
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
It's another
question I can't answer.
Because you appeal to all age groups as well, Tony, which is...
Yes, that's true, yes.
Transcend all that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't like to push myself too much, but you're so right. You're very. That's what I love about you, Ricky. You're very observant.
But the idea that Miley Cyrus was so keen on getting this controversial legislation passed about the US military... detaining individuals indefinitely without trial, that she was willing to take a kit off at an award ceremony, is a silly idea.
I wouldn't mind taking my kit off at an award ceremony if I got an award.
If, let's say, Keir Starmer said, Tony, we really need your support. Can you do the balloon trick again for us? You'd be, you know...
I'd be there.
You'd be there if the money was right.
Yeah, well, of course, if the money is right, and if I got a, if I was knighted.
Okay, yeah, well, we're all after that. That's the long game, though, Tony.
You'll have to be a big balloon.
Well, thanks, Lance Price. You are officially not a turd, and thank you very much for coming on and clearing a few things up for us.
Great pleasure, and I'll have a word with a few people about Tony's knighthood.
Okay,
thank you very much, Lance.
OBE.
I'll leave it with you.
I just want an OBE, so I'm not aiming too high.
Well, I'd be happy with that.
Thanks, Lance. Yes. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Lance.
Well, summer is finally here. We've had the best May ever. The sun has been shining, and I've been out there in my Speedos in the garden, giving the neighbours a little bit of a treat with my bronze, beautiful, gold-like body. But sometimes in the middle of the afternoon, I don't know about you, with the sun beating down, you get so thirsty, don't you? And for me, at any rate, there's nothing more refreshing than a delicious beer. And you're saying to yourself, I don't want to go to the shops, but I have found somebody that will deliver it for you. I'm talking about Beer 52. They will bring you beer. Now, this is a fantastic offer. They're offering a free case of 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet. All you need to do is go to beer52.com/pop and the cover of £5.95 for postage. And you're saying, Tony, that can't be right. It is. Honestly, it really is. They'll deliver you 8 craft beers for £5.95 postage. Now, each case is delivered direct to your doorstep. This is the great news, so you don't need to leave the home. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club with over 150,000 members, and they send a brand new case to you every single month. Now, each case has different themes as well. Past themes have included beer from New Zealand, where I love New Zealand because I get my Manuka honey from that. That is delicious. Noel Edmonds lives out there, and I'm sure at this very moment he's probably going through a vast number of beers. I know Noel very well. South Africa, Korea, and all over the USA and Europe. All these beers come from there. And as an independent British company, Beer 52 are passionate, as I am about this podcast, about beer. Now, if dark beer isn't your thing, and it's not really with me, I prefer the light beer, you can simply choose the light option and your case will come with an award-winning beer magazine ferment and a tasty snack to go with it as well. Don't worry though, if you do change your mind, we all do sometimes, you can pause or cancel your account at any time. So all you've got to do, it's as simple as this really, go to beer52.com/pop to get your first case of 8 beers for £5.95. And you're saying, Tony, are you sure about that? Only that amount of money? I am absolutely positive about that. I'll say it again. Your first case of beers for £5.95. Just go to beer52.com/pop. That's what I'm going to do right now.
It was a complicated business, but they knew the nuts and bolts of it. Plus the screws and washers and wing nuts. Tools in hand, here come Ricky and Tony, pop detectives.
So the history of pop, there are several examples of pop stars being involved with politicians or covering up or taking away the gaze of us from the politicians. I'm thinking about President Bush. There was a thing where Britney Spears had a meltdown and it kind of hid some stuff that he was getting up to. And what we need is someone that spends every day, all day, every day, 24/7, Tony, looking into pop. And what better than someone that runs a course, a university degree on pop music?
What, you can get a university degree
in pop
music?
You can get a university degree in pop music. It's, you know, School of Hard Knocks, University of Pop.
Yeah.
That's my history.
Yeah. Have you got somebody who fits that?
I do, yeah. He's called Adam Baer on a conference call waiting for us. He's a lecturer of popular music at Newcastle University. I mean, what's higher than a professor? Because surely you'd have that. Because you've been DJing popular music, but not, you do sounds of the 60s, but you do modern songs as well all across the radio.
Yeah,
so you
of course
must
I do,
know
yeah.
more than anybody.
If I want to know anything about popular music, Ricky, I ring myself up.
Yeah.
And at the moment, I'm always in, which is great. So and I ask myself a question and I get the answer. I've never studied popular music myself. I just listen to it.
If they said to me, "Do you want to do geology or pop music?" I know which tick box I'd be ticking.
Yeah, I
suppose geology's rock. Yeah.
I wouldn't do history, would you? There's no future there.
that's a Tony Blackburn.
That is a great gag.
Right then, Adam Baer is on the line.
Caller joining. Caller joining.
Hello.
Hello, Adam. Ricky, we're going from a spin doctor to a pop doctor.
A pop doctor. I mean,
a pop doctor.
I only know Dr. Fox, and he wasn't a real doctor.
Yes, I have a I teach on a degree in contemporary and popular music.
That is brilliant. Sometimes I've heard people looking at degrees and thinking if it's not maths or English, then it's not of importance. But I think that pop music, although by its nature is transitory and throwaway, affects us in a on a cultural level massively.
I agree entirely. That's why I research it and study it.
Pop music is a great indicator of what's happening at the time, whether it's the sounds that are being made, the words that are being said, or the way people follow it. Or even consume it is an indicator of what's happening in the world.
Yeah, it's like a barometer. You can tell what a country is thinking or feeling through the way that it consumes and makes music.
I think we get that whenever we have the Eurovision Song Contest. And it brings us round to the fact that the rest of Europe don't like us very much.
I don't know. I don't know if the Eurovision Song Contest is the cause of that.
Do you like the Eurovision Song Contest?
I don't mind it. I think it's a pity. It's a pity it didn't run this year.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, because I've been writing a lot of songs.
Oh, yeah, Adam,
knows,
Adam.
And there's one particular. About trees that I think might have been a winner.
Could have been, because we all love trees and they are a big part of our lives. They give us life in many ways.
Yeah.
But Adam, we were just talking to Lance Price, who is an ex-spin doctor for Tony Blair, and those particular times, Britpop, Blairism, it was where pop music and politics came together, and there was a great feeling about the country, and it felt very special, and they kind of piggybacked each other and became something bigger than each of them in our lives. So that's a really good example about your cultural barometer, which I think is spot on.
Yeah, sort of Cool Britannia, 1997. It was a particular moment in our history, and you know, Tony Blair was very adept at marshalling that.
Yeah, and politics can use music in several ways. They can piggyback pop, but they can also use it to hold a negative mirror against society, such as in the late 70s with punk, when it was held up as everything that was bad about. You hated it, did you, Tony?
Yeah, I hated it.
Why didn't
punk,
you like it?
Yeah, didn't like it. I just found it tuneless.
But that was a reaction against it becoming too pompous.
Yeah, but it's not as good as Downtown by Petula Clark.
Well, very little is, like that, Tony.
Well, exactly. You're absolutely right. But I mean, I could never understand a word they were singing about or anything like that, whereas with Petula Clark and Downtown. Downtown.
When?
Downtown.
So what's your position on Downtown by Petula Clark, Adam? Do you do a section on that on the course?
I don't have a section on Downtown. Maybe I should, actually, because, yeah, you know, I do consider music as protest, but then also as a way of kind of supporting whatever the current moment is. I mean, it's interesting what you say about punk, because those arguments are as old as the hills. Before punk being not understandable and vulgar, it was rock and roll. And then in the 30s, it was George Formby was banned by the BBC at one point. So.
Well, he just sang about willies, didn't he?
He was cleaning windows most of the time.
It was filth, Tony. Absolute filth.
Yes, I'm absolutely
you
right.
You hate the ukulele as well, don't you, Tony?
I can't play it. I've got a ukulele, but I haven't. You've got a ukulele there, have you? Can you give us a little
no,
blast?
No, not very good.
Well, it doesn't never stop me.
That's the only four chords I know.
It's the only four chords you need, according to punk.
Well, they perfect. It was bringing music back to being able. Anyone could make it if you had something to say, rather than you needed to have your 10,000 hours in before you're allowed to get in a studio. Which was, I think, was a positive.
Well, like Bob Dylan. He always struck me, Bob Dylan. I don't know if you ever met him, as being a really miserable old sod. I don't know. Have you ever been out for a meal with Bob
me?
Dylan?
Me? No, yeah. I don't really know that many celebrities apart from you, Tony. So let's get back to the case in hand. So here we go, Adam. The thing is, Miley Cyrus has been accused by this lead singer of Korn of being a tool by the Obama administration of trying to distract from the passing of legislation to detain individuals indefinitely without trial by twerking at an awards ceremony. Now, on the surface of it, this sounds preposterous. But looking into it, the spin doctor we just spoke to, Lance, he said that it's called dead catting, where you find a story bigger than your own. You know, smoke and mirrors. Would you agree with that?
I think it's unlikely that there was anything deliberate. I mean, the Obama administration was quite adept at getting celebrities to support it publicly anyway.
Yeah,
including Miley Cyrus, actually. So, and there's no guarantee that Miley Cyrus twerking at the Video Music Awards.
Yeah,
there's no guarantee that the story will go the way that you want it to go.
Yeah, exactly. They're uncontrollable pop stars by their very nature. But are you...
Particularly when they're twerking.
Particularly. But
I've... I did a bit of a twerk in a an office at the BBC once.
Did
actually.
You? Is that how that...
The Director General, it was really? At the time, but it didn't go well.
A whole movement started on the back of it. But the thing I'm thinking about here, Adam, is have there been any examples where pop stars have been directly used by politicians as a way to divert attention from something?
I think when it happens, it's usually... pretty transparent, because yeah. If a politician has that kind of access to a pop star, there's usually more to be gained in being shown to be friendly with the pop star than risking some covert action. So I guess Harold Wilson giving the Beatles MBEs,
yeah,
or Oasis at number 10 Downing Street. The photo opportunity is probably worth more than some story.
Yeah, and you think from this that usually the politician gets more out of the deal than the pop star.
It depends what the pop star wants. I mean, this idea that pop and politics are like oil and water is kind of a myth. There's plenty of pop stars have got their own political agendas and they want to promote their own ideas. So having access to a politician might work for them in that.
Are you any good at twerking and working?
No, well, at the moment, because of the virus, I'm twerking from home. That was a joke that we knew was coming from the moment someone said twerk. It wasn't even... I'd written it down, for God's sake.
What's your thinking on this, Adam, about twerking? Are there any politicians who are particularly good at it or not?
I have no idea. I'd rather not know, if I'm honest.
No, I...
But I think... You're erring towards the side of Miley Cyrus wasn't a political pawn in Obama's evil plan to get elected.
No, I don't think so. And the platforms that came out on, it was, InfoWars was, famously Wilder Shores of conspiracy theory and the Earth is run by lizards type tinfoil hattery that was aired on. So I think... I'm going to say no.
Okay, so that's your point of view. Well, Adam Baer, thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
And we appreciate it greatly, and I hope to speak to you soon. Lots of love.
Thank you.
Bye, then.
With his brains and his looks, they could go places. Ricky and Tony, pop detectives.
Let's close this case, Tony. Miley Cyrus, yep. Political pawn. We've all seen it. Political pawn used by Barack Obama to cover up some legislation changes. I do not think this is true. It might have distracted from that, but it wasn't directly related to the Obama administration. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with you. I think it's ridiculous to think that he would have used Miley Cyrus to do this. So I really do think the case is closed.
You can use your rubber stamp.
Yep.
So if you have any mysteries about the pop world specifically you'd like solving, then who better to get in touch with than Ricky and Tony at our Pop Detective Agency? How would you do that, Tony?
Well, it's pretty easy, and there are lots of ways of doing it, actually, Ricky. You can get in touch at rickyandtony.com. You can send an email to podcast@rickyandtony.com, and you can find us on Twitter at rickyandtonypod.
So what are you going to do with the rest of the day, then, Tony?
Well, I'm going to try and knock out a few more songs, actually, for the album that so far nobody wants.
Well, I think that the best way to go about this is you get the collection of songs, 12 songs, and then when we when we stride into the A&R man's office at Mr. Big Records, we'll slam them down on the table and we'll say, release this, you big nana, and he won't be able to resist it. But to be able to go in there with it fully formed as it is, it means less work for them and more cash for you.
Could you be my manager on this? Because you got more in with the record company.
I just learned a lot from...
Would you fancy handling
me? I'll handle you.
I mean, in a nice sort of...
Well, I just learned quite a lot from Adam Baer from the University of Newcastle. And I think just from that short conversation, I think I've got the gist of what to do with you.
So you've slightly side-dodged the fact that you don't necessarily...
I will be your manager. We'll get the contracts drawn up this week and I'll sign them when we meet next week on Rick and Tony's Pop Detectives.
The music business was mean, but Ricky and Tony could do mean. They were born for it, like a mayfly was born to die at the end of the day. They slammed shut the filing cabinet, pulled the cord on the Venetian blind, threw on their trench coats, and headed out into the rain. Until next time.